Welcome back. The issue of housing has taken greater priority, certainly since the pandemic broke out, the high cost of housing, not only here in Quincy, but across the country. The city is involved in another five-year housing production plan, the Quincy Planning Department, in conjunction with the Metropolitan Area Planning Council. So we've welcomed Sean Glennon and Emma Battaglia to come on over and tell us what this is all about. Sean, Emma, Happy New Year, first of all.
Thank you.
Happy New Year. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, great to have you both. Really appreciate it. I know, Sean, this was a process that is not new to the city, right? You've had other production plans in the past.
That's right. It actually started in 2008, when the Commonwealth promulgated housing production plan rules, actually in February, so it was 14 years ago this month. And that's not to say the housing production plans didn't exist prior to that, but communities kind of did them on their own. There was really no necessarily any rhyme or reason that communities had across the board.
Right.
And so the state decided to promulgate regulations so that there was a uniform process. And so we've had one since 2010. We did one in 2016, and now this is our third and our second time working with MAPC on it.
So we'll start out with the basics. What is a housing production plan?
Emma, do you want to take that?
Yeah, sure. So it's really a plan to understand a community's housing need and the demand for that housing. And we look at the demographics of the community, the housing stock, how affordable it is to the people in the community. And then we come up with a list of development constraints and also opportunities that we can look at over the next 5 years. That's the length of the planning life. And we basically want to create a vision for future development. So what kind of housing we want to see for at what incomes and, you know, what types of housing. So are we talking smaller, bigger buildings?
And that's something that will change as the community changes, correct? So, you know, Quincy is not the same city that it was in 2008, 2010.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We see the community getting more racially diverse. Also, Quincy is not absent from trends that we're seeing across the region with populations aging, more older folks, they have different housing needs. So we want to be thinking about people across their lifetimes, really.
Now, did the MAPC, the Metropolitan Area Planning Council, exist when this process started, you know, way back when?
So MAPC has existed for a few decades now.
Okay.
And, you know, our role has evolved over the years. Mm. We serve the 101 cities and towns in and around Boston. But I think, you know, our role with playing, you know, supporting equity and advocacy has really only expanded as we've, you know, become a larger agency.
So how does the Quincy community shape up, Emma? Where does it stand when it comes to housing right now in terms of a community of its size?
Sure. I mean, we've seen that the population is growing quite substantially.
We just had the 2020 census, so over 102,000 people.
Right, yeah. Right. Over a 10% increase in population since the last census, which is a big number.
Yeah.
And so where are those people going to live?
Right.
And as you have more of a demand for housing, that obviously increases the cost, supply and demand, basic economics. And we're seeing that a lot of folks, seniors, families, and, you know, in particular, racial and ethnic minorities really struggling to find housing that is affordable, either rental options or ownership options.
So, Sean, did the city kind of meet its goals from the last housing production plan?
I'm glad you asked. And I think it's important to comment that although this is a new plan, you know, we always look at what we did before. What were the goals before, and did we meet those?
Right.
Which obviously, you know, has an impact on what we want to set as goals moving forward. So I'm happy to report that we have increased federal funding for all of our housing programs, which was a goal from the last five-year plan. So not only with our community development block grant program and the home investment partnership program, which have been, you know, decades-long programs that we've used for housing rehab and housing production, but also we have brought on a lead paint abatement program, which allows for people to stay in their homes that maybe couldn't afford lead abatement, and obviously making it safer for children under six. And we've also been working with the Affordable Housing Trust Committee.
Yes.
And, you know, increasing those funding, you know, issues and making sure that developers are paying into the fund if they're going to pay for a fee in lieu program, or if they need to put the units on site. We make sure that, you know, we take a look at those and monitor those each year to make sure that they are being, you know, made available to low-income people. We also partner with our local CHODOs, which are community housing development organizations, such as NeighborWorks Housing Solutions and QCAP. And some people might be surprised to know that QCAP actually is a housing provider.
Okay.
You know, they know about a lot of the other programs that they provide.
The energy systems,
exactly,
most famously. Yeah.
And the food pantry that they have down in Brewer's Corner, the Head Start program. But they also own and operate many housing units.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Across the city. So we work with them to create affordable housing units, and then utilizing the trust funds, not only for bringing the money, you know, into the fund, but also getting it back out there. So over the past 5 years, or during the last plan, the trust took in $11 million from developers, and we put out $11 million to create additional housing, to the tune of about 200 units, actually over 200 units during that period. So Germantown House was a project down in Germantown, working with NHS to create 5 units of affordable housing for individuals sensory impairments.
Yeah.
Quincy Housing Authority, they had taken some units offline many years ago to convert it to office space for their agency. We helped them with money to rehab and bring those units back online as Housing Authority units. 25 Temple Street, which is across from the Church of Presidents. People might have noticed there are 2 additional floors going on. That's a project with Leo Martin that we've funded to create a veterans housing on the top 2 floors. Also at 1431 Hancock Street is another project with Leo to do affordable housing. That was a building, people might remember the pink facade that was on the front.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Leo has removed that and exposed the beautiful brick facade that exists. You know, it's a really nice architecture there, which will be affordable housing. And then also on Bersani Circle, we've done a project there, Winter Street with NHS, and we've also allocated $1 million to Father Bill's Housing Resource Center.
Oh, really? Okay.
Which is not just an emergency shelter. It's really important to distinguish that it is a housing resource center.
Yes.
That will have a triage model with subsidized housing, permanent supportive housing on top, which is, you know, a really, I think it's a national model.
It's going to be a game changer. It is. They've said that has not existed anywhere else in the country to this point.
Right.
So. Does the trust fund meet the demand?
Well, no.
Okay.
I mean, and that's partially why we're doing this.
Right.
We know there's more demand than supply.
Right.
And one of the pieces that came out of this process is that for every one, well, put it this way, for every 4 households that qualify for affordable housing, only 1 unit is currently in the supply.
Okay.
You know, so we know there's not enough for those that qualify, to put it bluntly.
Okay.
We have met what's called the 10% threshold under the subsidized housing inventory, which is a very important threshold to meet. And that's not to say that 10% is the end of it, that should be it, but that's a threshold that the state mandates, not us. There are only about 20% of the entire population, all among the communities in Massachusetts, that have met that designation. Quincy has now met that threshold, which
just met it
recently.
Okay.
Yeah, we're at that 10% threshold, which means that if a 40B project, which is a project that would allow greater density than what the local zoning would allow, if a 40B development were to be proposed, that's something that the ZBA could deny, and it would be upheld by what's called the Housing Appeals Committee.
Because you meet that threshold.
Because we meet that threshold. Okay. So again, that doesn't mean we're going to stop at 10%.
Right. Yeah.
But it's an important distinction that I think it gives neighborhoods some protection, so that it allows, you know, community groups and neighbors that might be concerned about very dense development next to them, that this does give us some flexibility to prevent that and put it where it belongs.
Well, it's no secret that's one of the major concerns about development in the city, not only in Quincy, I'm sure, but all communities, is not to kind of squeeze out neighborhoods,
right,
with large developments like that, to be sensitive and have a nice balance.
That's exactly right. And I think, you know, one of the really important points is that somebody that's watching, I don't want them to think that this being a housing production plan, it being an affordable housing production plan, means that we're trying to, you know, flood every community with quote-unquote Section 8 units, which has had negative connotations. People are concerned about that. And what that means, it often means, you know, absentee landlords and you know, some properties that aren't always kept up to speed. This is a plan that is going to provide homeownership options for kids that grew up in Quincy that can't afford to live here, that want to live here.
Yep.
This is for families that can't afford a 3 or 4 bedroom apartment. This is for seniors that want to stay in their house but can't afford the maintenance in their properties.
Yep.
Or if they would like to downsize, this is a plan that will that will allow us to try and create some additional senior housing, which we know there's demand for that as well. They might be on a waiting list on 3 different properties, but this is, the name of the plan is actually called Housing Quincy.
Right.
We tried to, you know, brand it a little bit to better exemplify really what it's all about.
It's an important distinction, I think, because a lot of the headlines are of the new commercial developments, right? The high-priced condos and the high-rent apartments and the high-profile developments, which are great, you know, they're private developments, they're adding to the tax base, but they do price out a lot of existing homeowners.
That's exactly right. So, in theory, if you have a supply and demand issue, and that's really what housing comes down to in rents, that in theory, if you create more housing, even if it's market rate, it should at least, maybe not lower, but at least, you know,
stabilize
yeah. rents. And we haven't seen that, really. I mean, rents continue to increase. There has been about a dip that, you know, Emma is aware of since the start of the pandemic, where rents had come down at the beginning, but they are, you know, starting to creep back up. But just because they're lower doesn't mean they're cheap
or
affordable. So
lower compared to what, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And with a lot of the luxury housing that has come in, it just by demand, it has demanded higher rents.
Right.
But also, it does show that, I think, exemplify and illustrate that Quincy is a very popular and desirable place to live. So that's not necessarily a bad thing. Mm-hmm. You know, great schools, you know, 26 miles of coastline, incredible recreational you know, facilities and arts and entertainment and restaurants. So that in and of itself is not a bad thing.
Sure.
But this plan hopefully will put us in a position where we can try to stabilize some of those things moving forward.
Does some of the $46.3 million in federal pandemic relief money come into play here at all, Sean?
It could. Everything's on the table.
Okay.
We will look at every resource available. Even like I said, we've created additional resources since the last five-year plan, and so now with the ARPA money, even some of the CARES Act money coming in, we'll look at everything and see where there might be a place for it in the plan.
Okay, so we should talk about where the process in the housing production plan is right now.
Sure.
I know you've already had a couple of surveys and a webinar, right,
yep.
and an online forum. So
sure. Yeah. So we have had a few meetings with our advisory committee, which is made up of local officials and stakeholders who are really knowledgeable about the housing situation in Quincy and have a lot of connections with the community, specifically people who are experiencing the most housing insecurity, like the representatives who are on QCAP and NeighborWorks. And we have had our first webinar and our online open house, which was focused on getting the data out there, asking people what surprised them about it. I think one thing that's really notable to note is that a lot of people didn't know what low income actually means, and that it means 80% of the area median income. What that translates to for a family of four is about $100,000.
Okay.
And about $70,000 for a single person household. And that's just because the cost of housing is so high in this area.
So
when we're talking about affordable housing or housing for low income individuals, you know, it's first off, it means a lot. We're talking about a lot of people. We had a number of people kind of learn through this process that they do qualify as low income, which we think is really significant because if people can qualify for these certain housing units or housing programs, we want to make sure they are getting access to those.
Yeah.
So there's that educational piece. And then we are going to be in our next phase looking at what are the development constraints, what are the opportunities, and what are the specific strategies, programs, policies that we can implement in order to meet those goals. So we'll be having some additional advisory committee meetings. Mm-hmm. We are about to host a series of focus groups that target the Asian community, specifically the Chinese community in Quincy, and also folks who are really experiencing challenges around housing need that would be coordinated with QCAP and NeighborWorks. And then we'll have our final forum where we can present our draft recommendations and see how those fall in line with what the community is looking for.
So is the idea more of a focus on rehabilitating existing housing? Because, I mean, Quincy's pretty much built out for the most part, right? We've got the Atlantic Ocean on one side of us, we've got the Blue Hills on the other side, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is redevelopment, infill, so if there's, you know, a small lot that something can fit in.
Yep.
But also thinking about options, I think, across the city, and different options are going to work better for different areas. So the kind of higher density development that we've seen in Quincy Center obviously doesn't make sense for some of the single family districts.
Mm-hmm.
But are there ways we could add more subtle increases in density where in-law apartments might be allowed? Where, you know, you can convert your garage into a unit that could work for, you know, renting out to a family member or even, you know, a stranger. And that is not only a source of income for that homeowner, but we are kind of gradually creating more housing opportunities without changing the fabric of those neighborhoods.
Sean, as you're well aware, the city's in the midst of rezoning changes, you know, to better reflect the development that's going on. Does this process take that into account along the way?
Absolutely. And actually, we tried to take that into account with the advisory committee.
Okay.
So we have four members from the Affordable Housing Trust Committee are on this advisory committee. We have four members from the planning department, so this is two from community development, including myself and Sherry Zoe, and then two from the planning division. So Rob Stevens is my counterpart on the planning division,
sure,
as well as Joe King, who's a land use planner in our department. That's eight. And then we have Beth Ann Strollo,
mm-hmm,
representing the Chodo, agency world too as well.
From QCAP.
Sure. So then on the planning side, once we get to the point where the advisory committee is comfortable with where the plan is, it goes to the planning board.
Okay.
And so by having the planning board representation on the committee,
yes,
hopefully we'll take that all into account as we go along. And then it also needs city council approval.
Oh, it does.
And so one of the members is Councilor Chuck Phelan, who is a member of the Housing Trust,
I see,
committee. So by having him there as not just a member of the trust, but also as a city councilor, he's obviously hearing about these issues all the time.
Oh, sure.
So to get his input is crucial as we move towards the city council phase, and we hope to get adoption before this council goes on recess for the summer, which will then move it to DHCD, the State's Department of Housing and Community Development, hopefully for approval over the summer.
Oh, will there be a funding request that goes along with that? Does this require funding?
It doesn't require funding, but the plan will talk about funding resources, mm-hmm, that could be used to rehab and create funding moving forward. I would like to make a point that,
please,
the funding for this plan itself, obviously there are staff costs associated with MAPC assisting us with this process.
Sure.
And the bulk of that is going to be coming from a state grant that we've received to be able to partner with MAPC for this. We're also putting about $10,000 of our federal home program admin funds into it, as well as matching funds from the trust. So there are no city taxpayer dollars associated at all with this development.
I'm sure it's a question people would want.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I'm glad you brought that out. Should the developers, do you think, be encouraged to develop rather than just pay into the Affordable Housing Trust Fund? I mean, it's great, you have $11 million, but you don't have any housing that they've, contributed to the stock from that. Does there need to be a shift in mindset, do you think?
Yeah, there is, we see it. It is cheaper. There's a cost benefit associated,
sure,
with, being able to put the units on site. Whereas if we take the money and then have to put those units somewhere else, it's going to cost us more.
That's right.
To build an adequate,
right,
or comparable unit. So we do encourage that. And I'm very happy to say that over the 20 plus years that the trust has existed, the trust has actually voted to take units on site more often than they voted to take the fee in lieu money, which I think is also an important distinction and an important statistic for folks to know, that it's not just money all the time.
Yeah.
Although the money is very helpful because it allows us to partner with these CHOTOs that might not be able to get federal resources, or they don't have the money themselves to do it.
Or it would just take such a long time.
Exactly. It takes years for these nonprofits, and they just can't compete with private developers that might have, have deeper pockets to be able to. If a property goes on the market on Monday,
yep,
and a developer buys it on Wednesday, that's just not something that NeighborWorks or QCAP
they can't
compete with.
React
they just,
like
they
that,
absolutely
yeah
can't. So it takes them years to develop projects like this. So if we have money in the account that we can use to help them buy these properties,
sure,
and develop them and rehab and maintain them, then that's great. And the money has also gone to things like the Housing Resource Center that I mentioned with Father Bills.
Yes.
We've allocated $1 million for the flood victims after that 2019 storm.
Yes.
Greatly impacted Housenek and Squanum in particular, and also $1 million in the early days of the pandemic that went towards rental assistance.
I remember,
for a lot
yeah
of the local workers that just couldn't pay their rent.
Yeah, it was huge. That was huge at that point. It was an emergency at that point.
Right. So taking the money is not a bad thing, but we would love to see units on site when it can be done.
More of a balance. Yeah, sure. We are up against the clock, unfortunately.
Yeah.
What is, Emma, the next step for the MAPC in this process?
Sure. So, like I mentioned, we'll be hosting our focus groups, getting out some resources to the community about what we've heard so far, and just some key messages that we want people to take away with.
Okay.
And keep keep your ears out. We'll be hosting our next round of public engagement early spring, probably in April. So we are hoping that everybody can participate in that process and we can hear from as many folks as possible.
All right. We've been putting emails and websites and phone numbers up along the way. If folks want to get more information, they can do that. We'll have you back, too, for an update.
Wonderful. Thanks so much.
Very welcome. Good to talk to you both.